Hello and welcome to Dyslexia Explored. I'm Darius Nondaron, your host, and today we're going to do something a little bit unusual. We're going to actually have 10 guests in the room. We're going to have a bunch of us all get together and talk about dyslexia and reading music. Does dyslexia affect reading music? Well, it does for many people. And it's unexpected. It surprises me that people are surprised that dyslexia might affect reading music when it affects reading letters, but it does. And it can often trip very gifted musicians up. People with a real musical gift can get discouraged because they can't seem to get around the mystery of reading music. So we're going to discuss this a little bit in this podcast, a bunch of parents, a bunch of tutors and teachers and young people as well, sharing in this podcast about dyslexia and reading music. Hope you appreciate it. Let's begin the discussion. Now, this is a known issue for people with dyslexia. It's very common, but it's very unexpected. So what we're going to do here tonight is just start a conversation about this theme and look for patterns and look for solutions that other people have tried. And we're going to actually record it as a podcast tonight. So like a group podcast, okay? Because there's a number of people who really want to be here and I want to send them the recording. So we'll just send them the audio recording. There's a number of music teachers and so on who'd really like to listen to this. So, right. Okay. So let's kick things off. Let's go around the circle and introduce ourselves to the other people who are in the group. Okay. So I'm Darius Nondaron. I'm the CEO and founder of Bullet Map Academy, which is an online dyslexia school where we teach people how to visually organize their thoughts and get things done in school with a mind mapping technique called the bullet map process. So that's what we do all day, every day. And I'm here because music isn't our core thing, but Denise, one of our employees and long-term parents of Bullet Map Academy, has a daughter who's having very gifted musically, but real difficulty with the music reading side of things. And it's not just her. I think there's others who are finding this great at music, but terrible at the music reading side of things. So what can we do about it? Do we just live with it? Or is there stuff we can do? And I have a hunch, and I've actually experienced, there are things you can do about it. So that's why I'm here, to help Denise out and the other students in our academy that might have a similar challenge. Denise, over to you.
Thank you, Darius. Hi. I've met some of you. Nice to see you again. My name's Denise, and as Darius said, I'm working as the learning plan coordinator here. But my daughter, who's 14, who plays three instruments, two very well, she's at grade 5, but could be beyond that. If she did a bit better with the theory, and she's just struggled for the last year with getting past grade 1 theory, to be honest. So yeah, that's why I'm here, to try and learn a bit more from everybody.
And she's 13.
She's 14.
That's 14. Right, yes. Okay. Just she's to give 14. People the context, yep. You know, yes. Grade 5 at 14 is quite an achievement. Leslie, why don't you introduce yourself? Why are you here? What are your thoughts?
Hi, I'm Leslie. My son has been with the academy, I guess, almost 18 months now. He plays trombone and has done so since the age of 7, but it has been a battle. It has been extremely difficult. He's now doing GCSE music and he's finding the theory side quite hard. Learning to read music in itself was reasonably okay, but above a certain note on the stave, the notes moved around. So he actually had anything above an A, he had to write what the note was because he couldn't reliably read it in the right position on the stave.
Interesting. Thanks, Leslie. Deb, what brings you here tonight to talk about music and reading music?
Sure. So Jack seems to, I'm Deb from the United States, and my son seems to, he seems to be able to hear music really well and play by ear. He started out playing piano several years ago, and his teacher was a little bit hard on him. Every time he'd make a mistake, she would make him stop and start over. And he just got to the point where he was really stressed out about it. So we took a couple of years off, and he's now playing guitar, and he's learned his chords really well, but it is difficult for him to read the music. And so I have to graph out. We've come up with our own system of graphing the songs for him. So it might be a measure with four strums, and I'll write the chord that he needs to play. And that's working really well, but it's really quite time consuming for me, and I don't really read music. So I'm hoping maybe we can come up with another system or try to simplify that somehow. But I do remember as a child, being dyslexic myself, I have difficulty telling which line the note is on as well, because, you know, the lines are so close together, and it did seem like the notes were moving around for me. And I'm thinking that's probably happening for Jack as well.
Thanks, Deb. June, why are you here?
Okay, hi everyone. My name is June. So I'm one of the coaches here. And the reason why I'm here is because I would like to learn more about it. Like, it's a different concept from what we're used to. Like, it's not specifically with the subjects that most of the students have. So it will be just interesting to know more of this one and, like, maybe, I don't know, learn from it instead, like apply it on my own as well. I mean, I'm not really like musically inclined, but it could be a start. So, yeah.
Thank you. Sarah.
Hi.
Oh, so there's two Sarahs. Sorry.
Never mind.
Okay. No, you're Sarah Harvey. Can you start us off, and then we'll go to other Sarah.
Okay. I'll let Harvey speak first.
Well, I'm Harvey. I play drums, and I'm going to, well, finishing my GCSE music, going on to hopefully music tech A level. And, well, I'm here to maybe help some people understand, or because with drums, it's a lot more of a simple concept to grasp, but with, I guess, more difficult instruments such as piano or trumpet, it might be slightly different, but the way I've sort of learned might, you know, benefit others. So, yeah.
Great. Thanks for being here to be part of this discussion, Harvey. Appreciate that.
And I'm here just to be nosy and learn, because I can't get enough of my mapping. So, yeah, that's why I'm here.
Great. Other Sarah.
Hi. So we are actually friends with the Voisines, Ash and Zoe Voisine. I know the Voisines take your classes online and really like them. I'm actually a music teacher. I teach piano, and all my kids are musical, and I think two or three of them are dyslexic. He's very, he plays by ear really well. They can read the music, but it just takes a while. And I did have one severely dyslexic student, and her mom ended up just stopping because she was 6 or 7. So she was really struggling. So I would just love to learn more and be able to teach kids with mild to severe dyslexia, just so we could, I have trouble reading the music too. I play a lot by ear. So anything we can learn to help teach would be great.
Fantastic. Thanks, Sarah. Zoe Voisine, would you like to share why you're here?
Hi. So actually, I can't figure out how to change my name on Zoom. So my name is Ash. My daughter takes, both my children, daughter and son, both take Bullet Map, and both of them have struggled learning the instruments, more in music, learning to read. At one point, we've had several tutors, and they've gone to several classes. At one point, they were coloring, but they just can't seem to understand or read it. So that's stopping them from growing to learn to be more musical. And they are trying to play three instruments, so it's probably not a good thing either.
Thanks, Ash. Thanks for sharing that. I've changed your name.
Oh, thanks.
Sue, would you like to share why you're here?
Denise invited me to maybe join along, because I'm the one that's trying to help Annabelle with her theory. And I was teaching her the flute until she went to change schools and has a flute teacher at that school now. So I was helping her with the music reading as well. And Denise is right where she is. That's holding her back, the reading, the music, the understanding, all of the symbols that are there. And I suppose I'm here not with any answers, unfortunately, but at this point, but just to kind of listen to hear what struggles people have. So I've been teaching woodwind instruments for years and years and years. And if I think about it, I will have had a lot of children through, or you know, students through, and possibly adults as well, but who might have struggled with that, actual understanding what's on the page. And it's just to try and find ways to help them in a short lesson in a school environment, when you're sometimes sharing lessons, it's just not possible to kind of get to that. And so if anybody, you know, has thought of some ways, as you are developing, Darius, you know, sort of some ways to try and help that, it's quite useful to know. Because I do find that kids, particularly if they're learning, they're finding it hard to just understand what's on the page. It sometimes just ends up in them giving up, which is such a shame, you know. And whereas I've always read music, and I read it, you know, from a quite of young age, and I understand it from that point of view. I find it hard to understand it when they don't understand what's on the page. And so it'd just be nice to get an insight into what can be done.
Thanks, Sue.
Okay.
Laurie, why are you here?
Hi. When your invitation came, I thought, oh, I've been frustrated with this maybe all my life, but just didn't really realize that it could be connected with dyslexia. My daughter also is in this program here with Bullet Map Academy and is doing really well with the mapping, and it's really helping her academically. But with music, I have a lot of frustrations similar to many of you. My husband's a guitar teacher. I was raised by a dancer and a musician. I think both my parents are dyslexic, and all three of my kids are. In my family, my parents and my children, it seems like we pick up an instrument and none of us have mastered an instrument. My father can play jazz piano just out of his head by ear. But sight reading music is difficult. And when he tries to compose, he tried being a composition major. He couldn't really, he has ADHD issues too. But he didn't know it at the time. He just can't complete a composition, and it just takes forever. And he can hear it here, but it doesn't come out. I've had trouble learning to read music. The bass clef is frustrating and the lines mix me up. I can sing parts and have spent a lot of time in choirs, but I have to learn the part like a melody. And then I sing best when I'm with someone. My daughter has spent a lot of time with learning voice. Piano was frustrating because of reading music and just working memory stuff. And she plays violin now, the Suzuki method, but reading music, transferring to reading music has been difficult. And also, as I've seen her do musical theater and dance, it takes longer to internalize the rhythm. And I feel like this might be partly connected with maybe the dyscalculia bit, with just the intuitive sense of quantity might not be there, or that she might have to just struggle harder for that in terms of just really internalizing rhythm. When I've tried to teach music, I can do music and participate with music, but when I try to teach it, I'm at a loss. I feel lost in all that dyslexia panic fog sets in. So lots of reasons. I'm interested to hear what everybody else has to say.
Fascinating. Okay, so we know where everyone is coming from. We've got students here. We've got music teachers here. We've got parents who really want their children to learn. And we've got adults who want to learn and are held back as well. So we've got a full spectrum. And then you've got me, who is kind of like, I'm here as a dyslexia tutor side of things. I'll tell you a little bit about my background. So I was compelled to do piano, and then grade one, I go into the exam test. I don't know, I was nine maybe. And I just floundered when it come to the, you know, some of the reading and writing stuff and the questions they asked, and I just ended up crying and running out. It was one of the most mortifying experiences of my life. And after that, I was like, I never want to do this again. And since then, I've learned to play the saxophone and the flute and ukulele and so forth. But music reading is particularly hard for me, and actually music rhythm. So seeing the rhythm in music is one of the most interesting things that I've noticed from Annabelle, and this experience with Denise and Annabelle is this ability to see the rhythm. And I think it might be interesting to just sort of deconstruct everything and zoom right into one particular example of where dyslexia can affect reading music. Now, I'm surprised that people are surprised that dyslexia affects reading music. Because, you know, if you think about it, if dyslexia affects how you decode words, then music is just another symbolic language that you write down and decode into something. So it makes sense that if you have difficulty decoding words to learn to read, you are going to have difficulty learning to decode words, decode music letter, music. Now, if you look at people who are learning to read and people with dyslexia and what their behavior is with learning to read, they will use all sorts of hacks and workarounds to make it look like they're learning to read, but they're not. They're learning to make you happy and learning to get by, but they're not actually learning the core skill you think they've learned. And that's why you've got this scenario where you've got a grade 5 student who can play grade 5 music. Denise and Sue thought she was round about grade 3 in her ability for theory, but when you go to the actual grade music and test it, it's just about grade 1, maybe grade 2, thereabouts. So in this scenario, what I noticed was, and this is common with everyone with dyslexia in one way or another, often a reading difficulty or a writing difficulty or an organization difficulty stops you, like a barrier, moving to the next level, getting a grade to go and become an architect or a doctor or whatever you need to do next. And it can be this invisible barrier, and you don't understand why you keep tripping over. And so what we're trying to do here is make the invisible visible so that you can see the invisible barrier and step over it with a technique. Okay, so we need to understand the barrier and then the techniques that get over it. So sometimes someone will share a technique and you'll see that a technique works, and you have to ask yourself, why does that technique work? And then you can reverse engineer what the barrier is that's invisible. And you can do it both ways. You can work it from the visible barrier to the technique, or vice versa. So I'm just sharing that as a little bit of context with, you know, dyslexia affects decoding reading, and it also affects decoding music sometimes. Not for everyone, it's different for everyone, but there's a common theme here. So where do we want to take this conversation? I think the most constructive way to really get something valuable out of tonight is to get to zoom in on something particular, and then just use that as a discussion point, and we'll naturally, because we're all dyslexic more or less, expand the scope of it and go off on tangents, but we'll keep pulling in towards this one thing. So at least we've got one point to anchor ourselves to. And let's take this example, which is reading the rhythm of music. So sometimes a musical note counts as 4 beats. Sometimes a note counts as 2 beats. Sometimes a note counts as 1. Sometimes it's a half, a quarter, an eighth of a beat, okay? And so when you see music written out, you see it in all these little dots and lines, And I'll give you one example that doesn't make sense to me. And that is, when you look at the bars in the music, they're different lengths. I mean, why on earth would you let them be different lengths for a young musical student when actually they're exactly the same time interval, but visually they're a different time, a different space? So for me, I'm a very visual learner and I rely on visual logic to understand things. So if they're not spaced out in the right rhythm, then it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't matter how many times you say, that's two beats, that's one beat, that's a quarter beat. I say to myself, why is that quarter beat the same distance away from a note as a half beat and then as a two beat? That doesn't make sense. And I need to make visual sense of it. Does that make sense? Sure. And so that's just one example of why the decoding process of music is such a high intellectual activity that actually I often need it as a visual activity. And what Deb's doing in rearranging it so you can visually understand the rhythm is very helpful. And that's what I had to do with Annabelle and actually create a system that I nicknamed the Dalio method because of the way I created it, so she could visually see the shape, see the rhythm in the music. Anyway, I want to just open up that on one topic, which is seeing the rhythm, reading the rhythm. So let's talk about reading the rhythm. Now, feel free to open up your mic, maybe put your hand up or something like that. Okay.
I don't really read music. I've played a little bit, sung a little bit, so I kind of have a concept of sort of how to read music. But I looked at Jack's music and said, this makes no sense to me whatsoever. How can I rearrange it so I can understand it, so he can just play the chords and know how many strums he has to do? I did take a picture of it if you want me to screen share.
Just please do. That would be great.
Okay, I'm not seeing it. So... Why don't I look for it and then you can come back to me. For some reason, it's not showing up even though I just took the picture.
This podcast is sponsored by DyslexiaProductivityCoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. Harvey, could you share a little bit, you know, you're a drummer and we're talking about reading the rhythm. What's been your experience of reading music, reading the rhythm, playing the rhythm? Have you got any thoughts on that?
Sort of. Well, there's also, I don't know if this, oh yeah, and I use a metronome. It's a sort of a beat counter. So I use that and it sort of dictates the piece in which you have to play. But what helps me is to play coincide with my drum teacher, so I can sort of mimic what he's doing, because the visual and sort of hearing is quite easy, or easier, instead of kind of just sitting there and trying to figure it out. So
with music.
Yeah.
So what you're doing there is you're seeing the rhythm by seeing his drum going down.
Yeah.
And you're also hearing the rhythm at the same time.
Yeah.
And you can play at the same time. So what I'm seeing there is, you're not reading music to read the rhythm. You're reading the rhythm by seeing a movement.
Yeah, but then after doing that, I felt like I sort of understood the music, because listening to the piece and playing it, you can sort of match it together.
Got you.
So I played this in this first half. So this must mean this little bit. And then you kind of just followed on from there.
And do you, when you're playing the drums, are you reading traditional music or are you using a drum code system that is for beats?
Yeah, it's a lot easier. There's only like a handful of sort of notes I can use in a different sort of order. So there's like the hi-hat, snare, the two toms, four tom and bass drum. That's just all in different orders. They all have different symbols. On the pieces of paper, so it's pretty easy to distinguish. So
And with when it comes to doing drum music, does it show visually logical order, spacing in between it, or is it just kind of all stuck together and you have to decode it?
There are spacing. I mean, on my book, there is definitely spacing. I don't know if that's difference because there's four beats in a bar and you can also have three or two beats. So I don't know if that affects the spacing in which the notes are laid out in, but for me, it seems, you know, in order, I guess.
Okay. Sue?
I think having looked at like so many different published music over all the years, I think it can get frustrating even for where I can read music and I've read it for a very long time. If there's not four bars on a line, and they put five and then seven, and then that really, I find that really hard actually to follow. I can do it, but what I'll do is I'll go along and I'll put maybe, add in an extra bar line in pencil every four bars so I can see where the four bar segments are. But it's also very frustrating because some publishers will beautifully space a minim, will have a minim space in a semi, you know, a four beat note will have twice as much space and the quavers will be together, but some published music, it's just not spaced well. It's just not spaced well, and then you just have to struggle on. Yeah, and it is really, even for when I feel like my level of reading is quite high, I suppose my level of understanding of what I'm seeing on the page. But if the spacing's not very well done, I'll have a moan about it. As will other musicians that I'm sitting next to. They say, "Yeah, it's just really badly written, this, isn't it?" You know, it does make a difference.
I think there's a case for having dyslexia-friendly music publishing.
Yeah.
You know, I literally think you could have, you know, dyslexia-friendly mark for music publishing. And part of that is that all the bars, these are the rules I would make, okay? Number one, all the bars are always the same distance apart.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. Number two, all of the music is all all the notes are positioned in the bar according to their proportion of the beat, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, and so it's exactly visually, you know, what else would I put? What else rules would you put into a music? Sarah, what would you put in?
Maybe some color, like color code the notes. I teach piano and I have for 2 decades and kids just get so confused, especially between the treble and the bass clef, because they're basically too off from each other. So the kids will memorize the treble clef and then they'll get confused why the bass clef is off, but you know, they're different. And I think that's confusing. Yeah. So if we could change that so that everything is similar to the treble clef and we color code the notes so that all the C's are red or all the D's are blue or that kind of thing. Can I just show non-musical people an example of some sheet music to explain what you guys were talking about?
Sure.
Okay, let me see if I can do this. So these are the measures. So this one's small, this one's large. This one has 8 notes, so they have to use more space. This one has less because they're using a half note in there. This one is very big because they have 8 notes, although this one doesn't have to be that big because they have quarter notes, but this one should be bigger. So it's just a hot mess, really. Here's an example. This is a primer level and it's the same way. This is the primer level. So you have the really big because they're quarter notes. So they're fitting 4 notes in there. And then this is a really short visually measure because it only has the dotted half note and then a rest. So they could just add rests wherever they need to in order to make them all the same. And I had never actually noticed that the measures were different before. So that's kind of funny.
Is this something you've just sort of thought about just now?
I've just never noticed the rhythm thing. My kids typically struggle more with the treble clef versus the bass clef and memorizing the notes. Honestly, it takes some kids years to memorize the notes. A lot of times now my kids are playing the piano. A lot of times the kids will say, well, that was C position. So they'll think like, okay, when I'm in C position, my finger number 3 is on the first line. And then if I switch positions, they think that the notes move. And I'm like, no, it's always the same. If it's on the first line, it's an E or whatever. And so I think
I want to say more than half the kids that I teach are a bit confused, even though I've explained it over and over and over again. So I think if there was something simpler for kids to learn, it would just be so much easier. I don't know. There's a lot of, I could think of a lot of different ways to do that. So yeah, that's my two cents.
Thanks, Sarah. Anybody else want to chip in on this reading the rhythm thing? Deb?
All right, I think I can do this now. It's funny because I think that's the exact same piano primer that Jack had. I really recognize that song.
Great.
Here we go. So this is, in the bottom here is a song from the guitar book, The Beatles Fake Book. So, you know, again, I don't really know how to read music, but there, you know, there's repeats throughout and you're repeating part of the song. So this is basically how I translate it for him. So you can see the rhythm. A bar is four strums and occasionally, let's see, I don't know if I can do a laser pointer with this or not. I don't think so. You can see C and D. He just knows there's going to be two strums of C there and two strums of D, and then his G is going to be four strums. I usually don't like to put more than one note on a line, but occasionally we kind of run out of room. Let's see, I think I have one of a more simple song here, one of the first ones I did for him. So that's pretty much what we do. So he's learned his chords extremely well, but I'm concerned when he goes to start strumming notes that we're going to have a major barrier because we haven't really been looking at the music while he's playing guitar.
Yes. Thanks for sharing that. Anybody else want to share there?
Main thing is rhythm, to be honest, now. Now he can sort of read music, and he often will spend an entire lesson playing the same two bars over and over and over again until he gets the rhythm in his head. You know, his teacher will play it along with him, or she'll sing it to him. She'll get him to clap it. She, you know, whatever. She has words that she uses to represent different rhythms, and he remembers those words. So he'll recognize it next time he sees it. But if he doesn't practice, then he can go back the next week and he'll have forgotten that rhythm and they'll have to start again.
Okay, so you've just described a difficulty with automaticity.
Yeah.
So there's three main difficulties with dyslexia. Let's just review them, okay? Number one, difficulty with working memory. Number two, difficulty with processing. And number three, difficulty with automaticity. Okay. So working memory is the ability to temporarily hold a bit of information in your brain while you're moving it to somewhere else. It's like a tray. And most people's trays can hold about 7 units, but people with dyslexia have 2 or 3 units in their tray, space in their tray. It doesn't mean they've got a bad memory, it just means they have to do more trips backwards and forwards. Otherwise, things fall off their working memory. Then there's processing. We'll skip that for now and go straight to automaticity. Automaticity, Leslie, what you just described is the ability to become automatic at something. And so some people can practice something 7 times or 10 times or 15 times, and they start to become quite automatic at it. They learn one little step and then they practice something else another 10 or 15 times. People with dyslexia would need to take maybe about 80 to 100 times to get the similar level of automaticity. And that's why they're recommended to overlearn it. Is it a problem with the brain? In fact, it's not. It's also comes as an advantage because you don't remember bad habits very easily and you don't remember bad good habits easily. And so what you're doing is you're constantly adapting to the new situation with the information at hand rather than the habits that you've got, which is very helpful for discovering new things and designing new solutions and new ways of doing things. But it's terrible for following reliable old ways of doing things. And so that's the dilemma you have with music, is this automaticity. And also the expectation you have with regard to what it takes to become automatic at something. So a teacher will go, well, you know, we have just tried that 80 different times. Should be pretty much solid on that now. Well, they've not got to the tipping point of the 100, or it could be the 85 or the 90 for that particular person, and they go back to zero.
Yeah, he's actually had a theory lesson this evening over Zoom. And I said to his teacher, I was coming to this with you tonight. And I said, have you got anything useful that, you know, I said, what is the main thing? And she said, patience.
Yes, yes. Now, the second thing I mentioned was processing, slow processing, we call it. It's actually, I regard it as manual processing versus automatic processing. You still process, but you have to much more intentionally go up the gears of something. But there's also a deeper level of understanding this processing is that some people process more automatically in different ways of thinking. So they can be a very automatic, fluid, visual processor compared to a written processor or a verbal processor. So you can have different levels of being manual at something. And so one of the techniques a dyslexia tutor will do is they'll say, right, if we approach it by me telling you all the time what to do, and it's not quite working because it's quite manual, why don't we go out into the garden and walk and play this music together? Because you're actually a very physical, movement-orientated person. And once you're walking and moving, that's your language of rhythm, for example. Like a marching band, for example. You're marching and you're doing the rhythm. Do you see what I mean? And so you learn, you start to figure out what language that child naturally, automatically speaks in thinking and translate it into that. And then once they've got it in that, you start gradually moving into that decoding of the text. Anyway, this, I'm just sharing all of my thoughts, and I've got lots of them, but I want to hear everyone else's thoughts. But those are the three main things: working memory, processing, and automaticity. So Leslie, you talked about automaticity. Deb, you're showing us the processing style of Jack is very visual and literal. You know, I need to see that it's for that chunk and that letter, etc. So you've done it very manually. We haven't talked about working memory, actually. What sort of working memory dynamics do we see happening in music? Working memory is when you temporarily need to hold something in your brain, do something with it, and then ditch it.
I would say, I was just going to say, the thing we found with Oliver, because he struggles, I think, so not only reading the notes, but looking at the dynamics and all the other performance markings on the music all at once, he just can't do that. So he has different coloured highlighters. So his key signature is always pink. His dynamics are always blue. You know, different things, accidentals are green. And so he can just look at a piece of music and he knows what he's got to do. But like Deb did for Jack, we still draw arrows from repeats at the back up the page because he gets lost, or he'll find the wrong repeat, or he'll not be able to, you know, find it when he looks back up the page. But yeah, he's found that using different coloured highlighters has been really helpful.
Fantastic.
I was just going to say, Jack hasn't really been asked to memorize a song per se yet, but I've noticed that I've just been almost shocked at how quickly he picked up the chords. And I just think it, you know, just the tactile movement of his fingers and having a pretty terrific audio memory. It's fascinating to see how quickly he's picked that up when he struggles with picking up other things.
I'm just thinking about some of you talking about what if your child tried to do some exams, and part of the exams, certainly the ones that I usually put kids in for, the sight reading test is one of the elements of the exam, and that must be really, really difficult to navigate that, because you can't prepare anything, you can't use highlighters or write it out in a different way. That side of it would be just really, really difficult to achieve, I imagine, that part of the exam test. Is that people's experience?
Fascinating. So sight reading, who's done any sight reading exam tests or kids?
Yeah, it's part of their normal grades. But as a dyslexic, we found we could ask for it to be blown up bigger, and he found that was helpful.
Is there anything else he could do? Is he allowed to mark it, or?
No, they're not allowed to mark it.
I think extra time is the thing that they offer, isn't it? More than anything, because you get literally, it sounds terrifying when you say 30 seconds, half a minute. At grade one, you might have four bars of music that you've never seen before, and that's what you have to, they're testing you on that. So they're putting you absolutely on the spot. By grade eight, you're talking about half a page of music that you've never seen before, that you still only get half a minute, and then the expectation is that you will work your way through that and get the majority of it right. And that's really very, very difficult for quite a lot, even if they're, again, a good player, to actually just be able to do that without taking it away and practicing it is one of the most debilitating parts of the exam for some people, really. But I know I've got around that over the years by making sure that I give kids sight reading a lot, so it's not just before the exam they have a couple of goes. We do it all the time because it is such a difficult thing to get a handle on. You know, when it's like you say, Darius, it's like reading another language and you're learning the symbols of that language, aren't you? But it's a very confusing one when you've got dynamics, like Leslie was saying, extra stuff in there. It's not just the notes and the rhythm. You've got other things to take in. And so, trying to find ways around all of that is quite a challenge, isn't it? To, find ways to notate it or break it into a different system, or
Sarah, do you have anything you want to share, or Harvey?
Well, it's a little bit difficult for me because I don't really do the reading test per se. I normally just go to drum lessons to play, but I feel like, I don't know, I was thinking of at my school we used this software called NoteFly, what might help people for notation, because it's very...
Can you come a bit closer to the microphone? Yeah. It's not such good quality. What did you call the software?
NoteFly.
NoteFly.
Yeah.
Flight, is it?
Yeah, Flight. And it's just a very visual sort of software where you can make your own pieces of music, and it has every single sort of like semiquaver and everything like that, and you can change the bar lengths and like what notes go in where. So it's very sort of customizable, I guess, into that extent. But yeah, I don't know what to say for the exam.
So Harvey's just taken his music GCSE. He's very lucky where he's going. So they've basically tailor-made for the class. They've tailor-made.
Yeah, sort of. It's very circumstantial because of lockdown, they can take out certain bits of my exam because we haven't really had preparation for it. So they've taken out the sort of notation reading to our unfamiliar piece. So I was quite lucky for that to happen to me. But
his teacher said he's got amazing music. Well, you understand music, you understand the beat, don't you? Yeah. And he can sort of, see his level of understanding with music is, his teacher said, is at A level standard, although he's only doing GCSE. So I suppose he has struggled reading music, but it's not held him back in being able to compose music, and because he's got amazing rhythm. So he can put pieces of music together and produce amazing pieces of music, and he can play the drums, but he can't actually necessarily read.
Yeah, I think that's the good thing about NoteFly, because you can sort of just put a load of notes and then sort of
create,
and like move them around to whatever sounds right for you. So then you sort of, I feel like I've understand notation a lot more because of it, because I didn't know anything about piano, but I've sort of gotten the concept of it.
And I suppose not being able to read music has its advantages, because when he's creating music, it's coming from inside, and he's able to produce music without actually reading music. So he's been able to do that, which is why he's going on to do the A-level.
Yeah. Do you know that the new Apple M1 chip in the iPad Pro is going to be able to listen to your music in real time and transcribe it immediately and accurately.
Wow.
So it's the processing power of it is so big, it can do it very accurately because of that. And it leads on, Harvey, thanks for bringing that up, is software. Now, often people with dyslexia is like, oh, software is the answer. And, you know, sometimes you can go way too far with software and you think, oh, tech is going to solve everything with dyslexia. And I think there's a combination of technology, technique, and tutoring that is helpful, the three T's, you know, one-to-one tutoring, concentrating on some technique and some technology. And one of the things I've noticed with Denise and Annabelle is that having a little app that shows you the rhythm and you have to tap on the screen and visually see where the dot lands on the music is an app that I got Annabelle to use a few weeks ago. And it, what's it called? Rhythm Trainer. It's actually for drummers to use, isn't it? And what happens there is when you tap the screen, you get visual feedback, not just auditory feedback. And so you can see where the note should be and where your finger landed as a dot. And it's a bit like SingStar for, you know, if anyone's played SingStar, you get that immediate feedback. And that's one of the things that I've found with people with dyslexia is they need immediate feedback. The faster the feedback, the better, because they're constantly adjusting. Like Harvey said, he's watching a drummer beside him, he's hearing it, he's matching his movements and his rhythms to theirs, and he's getting immediate feedback. Often immediate feedback in their language of processing. Now, so if your language of processing is visual, seeing a dot right under it is exactly what you need. Or if it's auditory, is hearing someone else's song or music and finding it resonating and matching. So you get that feedback auditory, you know. So I think there's a huge potential with apps to give specific feedback for a lot of these issues. Is one of the things. And the good thing about feedback is it helps automaticity, because what happens is if you close the feedback loop and make it smaller, your practice cycle becomes like 3 or 4 seconds or 10 seconds instead of, like, I think as a practical exercise for teachers, music teachers, they might play some music and then 1 minute at the end of the music, they go, "What? Right, that's very good. On the fifth bar, you did this." Well, the child's forgotten the fifth bar. it's kind of like, you know, okay, let's practice this 100 times. That's 100 minutes. If you change the feedback loop and make it much smaller in an exciting and engaging way, that 100 repetitions can actually be in the same time frame as a typical learner using a different technique. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Sarah.
I do that a lot with my kids, especially the younger ones and the ones who seem to have to struggle more. I will have them repeat something and play two measures like 10 times. Just keep playing that over and over and over again. And then eventually they memorize it, or it's easier for them, the automaticity or whatever. I'm just learning all this. But I do that a lot, and it's very, very, very helpful.
Because what feedback do you give them while they're playing it? I mean, like, what I'm interested in is, do they just play it and then that's it? Or are you nodding, or are you moving, or are you...
Sometimes I'm nodding, or I'll, you know, interject things kind of naturally as they're playing, or I'll say good real quick if it's between pages or something, so that it's not, you know, distracting them. It could depend on the student. I know some students don't want any, like my husband's very dyslexic. He can't do something and then listen to somebody giving him feedback. He'll just shut down. So it depends on the student, but typically having them repeat small sections if they're struggling with a section is good. I have the kids practice at home, and then they, when they're ready for a lesson, they should have pretty much mastered a song when they come back to me. And if they don't, then we just go through it. And then so the trouble spots, we'll just do them over and over and over again. And I do want them to master the song before they move on. but I don't care if it's several weeks. It's pretty simple music. Most of my students are like beginner, intermediate, but definitely repeating the small parts a lot so that I think I have a problem with the what you said, where you can only hold a couple things in your
the working memory.
Yeah, I have problems with working memory. So I understand that definitely that would be an issue. So yeah, that's very helpful.
I'll do the same as Sarah. If somebody's struggling with a particular few bars, you're just trying to identify where the actual problem is. And it's often just a couple of notes. So we'll just go right down to even one note, add the next one on, add one before it and maybe one after once they've got that and literally build it back up again. And that really helps. So you take away everything else and just go as if you're kind of zooming in on just a couple of notes that are causing an issue, and then build back around that. And also just be able to demonstrate. So they're doing it by ear as well. They're hearing me or watching what my fingers are doing or whatever. And so be able to demonstrate is and be willing to do that many, many times is very useful for some of them. And you just,
I'll share something with you. This app called MuseScore. I think there's tons of different apps, but one of the things that I learned in this app, for example, let me just make sure I'm sharing the audio so podcast listeners can hear it. Share sound. There we go. Okay, so you've got MuseScore, MuseScore. Just swipe up and you'll see the link in the show note description. We'll put links to everything that people have mentioned in here in the show notes description. But you choose a bit of music and, okay, there we go. So we've got the music. And what we're seeing there is we're seeing the music. We're seeing a line moving and touching the exact note that is meant to be focused in on, and we're hearing the musical accompaniment. And it's hard to appreciate how crazily amazing that is for someone with dyslexia, because it's like someone moving their finger along for you, so you know how to where to focus. Therefore, you're not using more working memory, because every time you're using your memory to find your place and keep your place, you're using one unit of your working memory. And then maybe your other working memory is like, I need to think about that note that's going to be coming along, or I need to be thinking about crescendo or whatever. These are all units of working memory that you temporarily use for a habit you've not got yet. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So when you see a bit of software like this, I noticed, and I'm not a musician, I've noticed the power of being able to play with someone that's accompanying you, like Harvey was describing. So I'm hearing exactly how the music should play all the time consistently. I can stop them, make them go at my own pace. It's not someone else. I can take my time over it. And I'm doing this in my practice time, not just in my lesson time. And I'm seeing exactly where the note is. So there's a real power in that, I think, for people with dyslexia that sometimes we don't realize. What are your thoughts?
I agree. A lot of times in the back of our books, there's a CD that's included. We don't usually use them anymore, but typically, if somebody was struggling, that would be a really good thing. But the MuseScore looks better than a CD because you can actually see something and not just listen. One thing I do is a lot of times I'll go over the notes where the kids are. Some kids have trouble tracking. They skip ahead or go back. So I'll put my finger above the notes my pen above the notes so that I'm not in the way, but I'm kind of over it, helping them track, especially like I think one of my students is kind of ADHD and one of them is probably that and dyslexic or like really creative. And I have to keep them on track because they'll say, no, I'm over here. And I'm like, no, you're not. They never trust the teacher. And I'm like, trust me. I know where you are. Funny.
That's fantastic because, you know, one of the things that you teach children when they're learning to read, or I have to do when I read as an adult, okay, I'm 51 years old. When I read with my finger. And it's not because I'm bad at reading. I can probably read faster than most people. But what my finger does is my finger replaces one unit of my working memory. So let's say I've got 3 units of working memory to use at any given moment compared to other people's 7. Someone else can use one of their working memory to hold their spot. I'm using up 1/3 of all my memory to hold my spot, and I can just put my finger there and relieve that working memory. So I can actually use the working memory to think about an idea. Oh, that's an interesting idea that I'm temporarily thinking about. And then while I'm temporarily thinking, I'm thinking about another idea and 3 ideas, put them together, go and put them in my memory and have another empty tray. So every one of these little hacks that relieves some working memory is very powerful for the child. And it's also useful for the child to learn that that's really helpful for them. So it could be as simple as you put a placeholder over the music as a letterbox, magnetically sticks over the top. You could have a magnet at the back and a magnetic placeholder that sits on the top. And that's your window that you're focusing in on. That's another way to hold your working memory, for example.
Yes, I actually did that a lot with some of my kids. I homeschool, I have 5 kids, teaching them to read. 2 of my kids struggled a little bit, and I would put my fingers around the word and cover the top and the bottom. Like I just did this naturally, but like a little thing with a little opening, like a box or whatever, so you can just see 1 word at a time would be helpful. Or if you're doing music, 1 or 2 measures, maybe both sizes so that you can adjust it. But the problem again is the size of measures is different all over the music. So just a struggle. I think reading music is obviously set up to be a visual thing, but it also connects with your kinesthetic learning and some of your auditory. But typically a lot of musicians are auditory learners. Like 2 of my kids are very auditory and they're really good at playing music by ear. If they hear it, they can play it. And creating music and keeping it in that key, whereas some kids will go out of the key. So they're auditory learners and they're not necessarily visual learners. So that's where the problem is. It's just set up badly, really. I mean, that's my opinion.
But. Lori, let's wind things up soon.
As I've been listening to this part of the discussion, kind of starting with where you were showing that software where the line moves along the music as you're hearing the music happen, so that you know exactly where you are, I was all of a sudden reminded of how 2 of my kids have a really difficult time listening to an audiobook while they follow along with the text on the page. They can either listen or read on the page. So then I was thinking, oh, maybe that is one of the frustrations as they try to read the music while they hear the music, while they also try to produce the music either vocally or on an instrument. That's at least 3 car seats, maybe more, depending on what they're doing with the rest of their mind, with the rest of their processing. Maybe that's 4 or 5 car seats. So maybe that's, I mean, whatever they're imagining, maybe taking up a car seat as far as like what they want the music to sound like or something. So it takes longer to synchronize and kind of synergize those different kinds of processing, the visual, the auditory, and the kinesthetic, where you're actually doing it and your understanding of it. I don't know. I'm just realizing that I know of their frustration with the audiobooks and the text. So with music, adding also producing a sound, I'm also right now just seeing how that complexity is the same complexity, just a little bit augmented with the producing the sound.
Thank you, Lori. Sarah?
I've got a couple of things to say, actually. One thing that Harvey just mentioned, that note flights, just to let you know, has got like a little line that you follow. So Harvey said that's exactly the same. But a couple of things really that has just struck me through working with children with dyslexia myself is that I don't know whether you can actually get music printed on colour paper, because children may be suffering from visual stress with the actual black ink on white paper. So that's something that perhaps they could have a visual overlay put on, which you can buy those plastic overlays. That's really quite important, because we have that all the time with children with dyslexia. Also, tracking is a real issue, tracking from left to right. So there are exercises you can do where you're just loop, you know, there's various exercises. If you look on the internet, it's sheets that you can print off to build up the eye muscles for children to be able to track from left to right. And using your finger is really key, especially in early stages of reading, I think, with children, that they are making that visual connection with the word by using your finger. I read so much faster when I'm using my finger even as an adult, but I don't need to, but I read 10 times faster with my finger. So there's obviously something there in having that sort of guide. And I was going to say something else about the last comment that was made. I can't remember now, it's gone out of my head. So my working memory isn't great.
Your working memory is 3. Because you have 4 points.
Somebody can probably. Oh, it was Laurie. What was you saying last?
So, guys, this has been a very helpful conversation for the last hour and 10 minutes. Thank you very much for being here. I hope you found this helpful. One of the reasons why we wanted to start this was to see if there was any of you that wanted to meet together on a regular basis for, say, like 4 conversations over 4 weeks, sort of like this, to just bring you together. Probably won't be facilitated by me per se, but it's just to bring you two guys together to talk this through and maybe go away, practice on something that you learned, come back, discuss it, maybe try different things and that sort of thing, you know, to see if there's some group that can help each other out for a little while. What are your thoughts, guys? Is there anybody who's interested in doing something like that for, let's say, 4 weeks in a row?
Sounds good.
Okay, right. Well, okay, let's go for the 8 o'clock, Tuesday night, 8 till 9, you'll meet, facilitated by Denise. Are you going to be free Tuesday, 8 o'clock, Denise, by the way?
Yes, I'll be here.
You've been very quiet, by the way, and you're the reason why all of this started.
I have, and a lot of it rang bells, to be honest. I loved the whoever said about audiobooks. I thought, yeah, that's exactly it. So she can't listen, read the music, and play at the same time. So when she did Suzuki, and I heard somebody else mention Suzuki, you're listening and playing. If her teacher says, listen to this, and she plays along, she can do it. But put all of it together and it's just impossible.
Well, I believe it's possible. Like, I believe it's possible to teach a child with dyslexia to read. I believe it's possible to teach a child with dyslexia to write and to remember. But it's not possible to do it the way everyone else does it. And so what we need to find is their way of learning to do that, which is a road less traveled, but more particular to their mind. Not that I'm telling you off or anything like that, Denise, forgive me if it comes across like that. But it feels impossible, but I think trusting that it is possible with the right technique is a helpful sort of framework.
Yeah, sure.
And really that's the impetus that all of us have right now, which is like, there's got to be a way to do this, you know? And there is. And I'm sure there's other people with much more experience than us in music that do have experience in dyslexia and teaching reading with music with dyslexia. So if you know of anyone, this is not a closed group. This is an open group that other people can come in, and who knows, something might come of this. Because I think there needs to be something that's explicit about dyslexia and music reading. Sarah.
I've just remembered the other point I was going to make, actually, which is about the audiobooks, because I listen to audiobooks as well. And I've noticed that if I'm listening to an audiobook, my imagination, I can actually see pictures in my head. So that might be a reason why when children are listening to music, their brains go into sort of a different space, if that makes sense, and they're seeing pictures. So you've got lots going on, you know, there's lots going on. So yeah, if I listen to an audiobook or if I listen to music, I actually get images. I can see images in my head. So perhaps that's a bit of a distraction when then you're asked to read at the same time. So they might be experiencing that. That's just a thought.
Well, guys, this has been a great podcast, a great get together. Thanks very much for coming. time to say your goodbyes.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.